You're listening to event audio from the Brookings Events Podcast, part of the Brookings Podcast Network. For more in-depth analysis and commentary from Brookings scholars and our guests, go to brookings.edu/podcasts or listen via Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Policy Podcasts.
Hello, I am Cam Carey, the Ann and Andrew Tisch Distinguished Visiting Fellow at the Brookings Institution. And I want to welcome you to this discussion of the future of transatlantic data transfers. We have with us today Commissioner DJ Renders, the Justice Commissioner of the European Union, who oversees that portfolio. And before joining the Commission about a year ago, he was for 10 years a senior minister in the Belgian government with the impressive finance, foreign ministry, and defense portfolios. And we also have Susan Aronson, who is a professor of international affairs at George Washington University and heads the digital policy hub there, and is also a fellow at the Center for International Governance Innovation, which really does indispensable work in the international digital policy area. So our program today, Commissioner Renders will make brief opening remarks. We will then have discussions and questions among the panel, and we'll allow about 15 minutes for questions. I want to remind you that since we're streaming over YouTube, if you have questions, please tweet with hashtag the privacy debate or email events at Brookings or tweet to at Brookings.gov. We have some questions in advance. Some of them will work into to the discussion today. And we'll try to intersperse those as well. So this is certainly a timely program. In July, we had the Schrems II decision, striking down the privacy shield, upholding standard contractual clauses for data transfers, but imposing on those adequacy requirements for third countries including a review of government access to information. And yesterday, of course, we saw the preliminary decision from the Irish Data Protection Commissioner. So, saying that Facebook would not be able to transfer or store data in the United States. So, things move forward. Commissioner Renders, I look forward to your remarks and thank you for doing this. I believe it's your first public appearance in the United States. And I look forward to our discussion today. Commissioner Renders, the screen is yours.
Thank you. Well, it's just an unmute, it's better. And thanks for your invitation and thanks, Mr. Carey, to such an opportunity to discuss with you about the situation, because we are currently facing on both sides of the Atlantic an unprecedented challenge for all healthcare systems, the economy, and the way of life. And technology and data can play an important role in. For example, limiting the spread of the virus, ensuring business continuity, and supporting exit strategies. The COVID-19 crisis has been a defining moment in the relationship between technology, on the one hand, and democracy and fundamental rights, on the other. And we entered the crisis as a democracy in Europe and in the US, and we should exit it as a democracy, fully preserving our fundamental rights and freedoms. In addition, we need to offer trustworthy solutions to make sure that society accepts data-driven tools. This is where strong privacy rules come in. And privacy is necessary to allow citizens to fully trust innovative solutions and use them without fear. It is increasingly clear that comprehensive privacy rules are key to the response to the global challenges we face today, whether in the context of the pandemic or beyond. I see that similar debates are also taking place across the Atlantic. I'm following these developments with great interest, including the various privacy bills introduced in the US at state and federal level. For example, to specifically frame the use of personal data in the fight against COVID-19. We are seeing in the rest of the world more and more countries adopting privacy laws that reflect the same core principles and rights. It will be important that the US also goes in this direction. And I can imagine that many of you are right now focusing on the consequence of the Schrems II judgment, and I will come to that in a second. But if we take for a moment a broader perspective, it is clear that this increasing convergence in privacy laws around the world offers new opportunities to facilitate data flows. The EU and the US have been cooperating in this area for a long time, based on a shared commitment to privacy and the rule of law. Privacy is one of the values that make us like-minded partners and that distinguish us from other countries that have a very different approach to these issues. We should work together, including with other like-minded allies, on initiatives that promote this type of convergence. These initiatives aim at leveling the playing field for companies and defining common standards on government access to data. For example, the Data Free Flow with Trust initiative launched by Japan is a basis also for ongoing work in the framework of the OECD. It is also against the background of these shared values that the EU and US have begun exploratory talks on strengthening the data transfer framework after the Schrems II judgment. The ruling raises complex issues, but also provides us some indications on how we could address them, for instance, with respect to redress mechanism. Of course, the US authorities are the best experts of their own legal system and in the best position to judge which solution to consider, or solutions maybe, because we have different kind of opportunities. One of the questions is whether to build on existing elements or whether legislative changes would be needed. I'm fully aware that these are not easy questions to resolve, especially in an area as complex and sensitive as national security. Also, it is clear that we cannot resort to a quick fix. We need sustainable solutions that provide legal certainty and that comply fully with the requirements of the court. It's a binding decision, like a decision of the Supreme Court. The judgment raises a more fundamental question. How can a fundamental right, or a constitutional right, in this case the right to privacy, be effectively protected in the borderless digital world when it takes only a few seconds to send data abroad? The debate in the US around the use of certain social media and the concerns they raise in terms of access to or transfer of very sensitive data shows that this is far from being only a European problem. According to a recent report published by KPMG, about corporate data responsibility, a very large majority of Americans want their data to be better protected. US citizens also seem to ask for legislation and individual rights similar to those we enjoy under the GDPR. Interestingly, according to this report, 87% of consumers view data privacy as a human right. I believe that compared to a few years ago, there is a probably more common ground between the EU and the US to find long-lasting solutions based on clear rules and strong safeguards on privacy and data flows, including on delicate questions concerning the interplay between privacy and national security. This is the spirit in which we are engaging with our US counterparts. I believe you have seen this spirit reflected in the joint statement I have issued in August with Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. In our diverse world, there's no one-size-fits-all response to the questions we have addressed on privacy and data flows. We are working with the Commission services on a broad toolbox for international transfers adapted to different sectors, business models, countries of destinations, and other kind of issues. It includes the modernizations of the standard contractual clauses. There's model clauses that companies insert in their contracts and that are the most used transfer mechanism in Europe. We worked on this in the past months to fully align the existing clauses with the GDPR and ensure that they are adapted to the realities of today's digital economy. The Schrems II judgment provides further clarifications on the conditions under which the clauses can be used. The data protection authorities already issued a first guidance document explaining these requirements immediately after the judgment. We will continue to work with data protection authorities in the weeks and months to come as further guidance is developed. The news we heard yesterday on the launching on an investigation by the Irish Data Protection on the use of standard contractual clauses make that work even more important and urgent. We will now intensify our work with the ADPB on the development of such more detailed guidance. In parallel, we will try to reflect and operationalize these clarifications in the new clauses. We believe that SCCs can continue to provide companies with an easy-to-implement tool to meet data protection requirements in a transfer context. This is even more important in the post-Schrems II legal environment. This is important because the SCCs provide companies with an easy-to-implement tool to meet data protection requirements in a transfer context. We intend to launch the adoption process for the new clauses in the coming weeks, and I hope finalize it by the end of this year. I think that in respective of whether we speak about the development of new technologies in the context of pandemic or facilitating data flows more generally, we should not see privacy as a challenge or an obstacle. Rather, privacy should be part of the solution. Another digital issue concerns access to electronic evidence. Cooperation between the EU and the US in the law enforcement area could be supported by the conclusion of an EU-US agreement on cross-border access to electronic evidence. This will speed up criminal investigations by enabling direct cooperation with service providers. Service providers should be clear on the rules they need to follow when requests are made from United States or European Union law enforcement authorities, thus avoiding conflicts of laws. The best way to avoid conflicts of laws, however, is to address these questions through international agreements. This is what we are seeking to achieve bilaterally through the EU-US e-evidence agreement and multilaterally in the context of the Cybercrime Convention, the so-called Budapest Convention. The Commission is committed to work on an international agreement with the US that would eliminate conflicts of law, as those that arose in the Microsoft case, which then triggered the adoption of the US Cloud Act. This requires ensuring that a strong set of data protection safeguards and procedural rights safeguards are part of such an agreement. The progress of these negotiations with the US is conditional upon how the legislative process related to our EU internal rules on access to electronic evidence is advancing. Staying on the subject of digital solutions in times of coronavirus, I believe the EU has to seize the opportunities offered by artificial intelligence, which is at the forefront of the response to the pandemic. But of course, AI should also respect citizens' fundamental rights to privacy and data protection. In February, the European Commission published a white paper on AI that pursues a human-centric approach. It sets out options for regulating and fostering an ecosystem of excellence and trust in the area of AI. On excellence, it means investing, coordinating of research, and fostering relevant skills. For ensuring trust, the paper includes documentation, testing, and accountability requirements. This will make enforcing existing laws more effective and help those who deploy AI systems to comply. I'm aware that some US businesses have expressed concern about use cases of AI that are sensitive as regards fundamental rights. They are calling for democracies to form a coalition of the willing to promote human rights-based rules on data and AI. The US also published guidelines on artificial intelligence. Further cooperation on the two sides of the Atlantic on artificial intelligence could also be possible. An EU-US framework will need to promote respect for fundamental rights, including human dignity, equality, non-discrimination, and protection of privacy and personal data. I fully support upward regulatory convergence on both sides of the Atlantic. In June, IBM, Amazon, and Microsoft said they would stop supplying facial recognition technologies to police forces. It is also a common goal to ensure that discriminations that happen in the offline world are not replicated and amplified by the use of AI. This is particularly important also in the context of the current debate on racial discrimination. I've also been looking at safety and liability of AI to ensure that victims of AI technologies have the same level of compensation as victims of traditional products and services. This is important to increase societal trust in this technology and promote its uptake, as well as to maintain trust in the justice system. Lastly, a few words on consumer rights. During the coronavirus pandemic, we saw a sharp rise in rogue traders promoting false claims or scams products. Many consumers were misled to buy overpriced, ineffective, or potentially dangerous products. In response, we coordinate with the network of EU member states authorities a screening of online platforms and ads. And we issued guidance on the most common illegal commercial practices taking advantage of the COVID crisis. I reached out to major platforms, including Amazon, AliExpress, Microsoft, Bing, eBay, Facebook, and Google, asking them to cooperate and address the identified misleading content. The platforms responded positively and have removed millions of misleading and illegal ads. But the fight against online rogue traders will not be over with the pandemic. Other threats, consumer vulnerabilities, will be used, as well as methods to defeat automatic checks, and this at the world level. Transatlantic cooperation should therefore be strengthened to share knowledge, best practices, and innovative investigation tools. I will work to strengthen the cooperation between the EU network of consumer protection authorities and the US agency in charge, the Federal Trade Commission. In conclusion, the coronavirus crisis has hit both the EU and the US hard. We must remain strong international partners and work together. It means stepping up efforts to provide true and transparent information about the virus and related health products to ensure that consumers feel safe. I'm also committed to working together to promote and further develop convergent solutions for the use of artificial intelligence. I will also continue to discuss with our US partners to find solutions for a strong data transfer framework that ensures the smooth flow of data for our transatlantic digital trade. This is essential for the EU and the US to reap the benefits of the global data economy. And I look forward, of course, to talking more about EU-US digital policy in our panel discussion. So thank you, Sir Kerry, for such an invitation. I know that you are focusing now maybe on the Schrems II judgment, but I'm sure that we have a lot of other things also to do in common between the US and the European Union, and we are working on that. It's maybe my first public apparition, like you said, in the US, but I was already as new commissioner in the US in December last year to meet the Attorney General and the Department of Home Affairs to start the discussions on all those issues. Now, of course, we are continuing to do that by video conferences, but with the same commitment, I assure you.
Yeah. Well, Commissioner, thank you very much. And yes, there's a range of issues to discuss, and certainly a lot of meat to digest in your comments on those. And I think anticipates sorry, some of the questions that Susan and I have, as well as members of our audience. I certainly appreciated your discussion about collaboration on AI. It's something that we have been working on at Brookings with the CEPS think tank in Brussels, and leading a dialogue with the Commission, UK, Canada, and the US, as well as numerous stakeholders and experts on how we can collaborate in AI development. So, and I was also encouraged by what you had to say about convergence, and but not approaching things with a one size fits all approach. I mean, I certainly view some of the challenges between the US and the EU on data issues as really stemming from cognitive dissonance that comes from common law thinking versus civil law thinking and how we think about law. Susan, I know you've focused a lot on in sort of trade issues and convergence, and have some questions about how we deal with that. So let me turn it over to you to explore that with Commissioner Renders a little bit.
Thank you. And thank you so much for organizing this. And thank you, Commissioner Renders, for speaking to us. Briefly, could you talk about EU perceptions of interoperability and adequacy, two very different terms, and how they might change given the Schrems decision, Schrems II?
But about the Schrems II, maybe just to say that, first of all, I said it's an abiding decision, so we will try to apply. And I was very pleased to see the reaction of our U.S. partners to say the same. And so we want to be sure that it's possible to apply the decision. Sometimes on the basis of the actual legislation on both sides, sometimes maybe with some change in the U.S., but I said it's, first of all, the U.S. authorities that they are in a good place to see what are the needs to change or not. But certainly, about the national security issue, I know that it's a difficult element. But I want to confirm that without the privacy shield, because now we are working without the privacy shield, it's important to continue to work with the standard contractual clauses. And we are working on that with the board at the European level, the network of national data protection authorities. And I've said in my remarks, I know that you have also seen the situation in Ireland yesterday, but it's an investigation. It's not a decision till now. I've seen the declaration from the people of Facebook and Nick Clegg first, but till now there are investigations in Ireland and not yet a decision. And we are working with the EDPB about the board in Europe to see what kind of other tools are possible to use. Because, of course, you know better than I the situation now with the election in the US. So I'm sure that it will be difficult to have some legislative change in the next weeks. But it's possible to continue to work on the modernization of the SCCs and then to see if we have the capacity to reach an agreement on some change. And so you spoke about interoperability. I want to say that the concept that we have in Europe is that, of course, we have put into place a protection for the personal data with the GDPR, and we try to be sure that the protection is traveling with the data. When we are open to send data to a partner, we want to be sure that the protection is traveling with. And so it's not first a trade issue, the GDPR and the data protection. It's first a protection for fundamental rights for the citizens. And of course, it's not just with the US. It will be with the same approach with all the partners. We have a lot of adequacy decisions with different partners, like Japan, to give an example. And we are in discussions with South Korea. But we will also discuss with UK, because, you know, due to the Brexit. So, again, we are very open to promote the GDPR. It's with, on one side, a real protection for the personal data. On the other side, it's very open to exchange data with other partners. But, again, we want to be sure that the protection is traveling with the data and that we have the same kind of protection. And is the reason why we take an adequacy decision or not. And you know, the privacy shield, it was an adequacy decision, but at the end now we have a decision of the court and we need to apply and to find a way or to go to a new adequacy decision after some changes or to apply other kind of mechanism.
Well, thank you. Did you have a follow-up, Susan?
How do you relate that to the notion of interoperability, given that it is a fundamental right, but it's also normative among countries? Will the EU's approach to interoperability change at all in relation to this? I guess the bottom line of what I'm trying to say is that I don't see that much focus on interoperability of regimes. It's more... you know, that because it is a fundamental right, it must be protected at all costs, and hence the EU approach is dominant.
But it's true that the protection is dominant, but I've seen also an evolution in many parts of the world. If you look to the evolution in Brazil for the moment, I spoke about South Korea, but also in the US. I said that also in my remarks. I've seen some new initiative in California, maybe not in Washington, D.C., but in the Washington state, about some possible new protection for the citizens. And I'm sure that we will have more and more a common approach, and it may be useful to discuss on this the international level. I mentioned the initiative of Japan to start something on that. But of course, the most difficult issue, it's maybe in relation with the national security. And you have seen in the elements of the decision from the Court of Justice in about the Schrems II, it's that there that we have some things to do because we don't have exactly the same approach about the capacity to collect some personal data for security reasons or intelligence reasons at the national level. But there also, there are some possibilities to see if we have the same kind of protection, this comparable protection, and certainly is it possible for the citizens to enforce their rights? That's also a question that we have with many partners. We don't want to be sure that it's exactly with the same rights, but we want to be sure that it's comparable and that it's possible for European citizens to enforce their rights before a court in the US or UK or Japan or in other countries, like for the national citizens, like for, in your case, the US citizens. And on all those issues, there are some possibilities to have a room for maneuver, because I'm sure that there's an increasing request also from US citizens to have a better protection. And I've seen sometimes in the political debates, I said that also, some discussions with the platforms and with the way to use the personal data. And I insist it's about the personal data. We have many other data and we will have more and more other data in the future without the same protection, because if it's business to business, is it with other kind of actions? And so we need to think about the way to have an evolution on all those issues. But again, we try to be sure that the protection that we are given to European citizens is traveling with the data when we transfer data elsewhere.
Thanks. So, Commissioner, you mentioned that the increase in comprehensive privacy legislation is certainly a drum that I beat here in the U.S. But the real focus of the CJU's decision is really deals with intelligence, surveillance, and the scope of U.S. authorities and judicial authorization, and the remedies available to EU citizens. I want to explore that a little bit in terms of what it will take, although I think you have deflected a question that I had and Vincent Manacou at Politico and EU had as to whether this will take U.S. Legislation on intelligence. But I also want to explore a little bit some of the broader implications, because certainly the decision imports adequacy requirements into SECs and puts on companies, both exporters and importers of data, the burden to assess the laws of third countries with respect to government access. How are they possibly supposed to do that? I mean, look at the process the Commission has been through, the challenges of doing that, and yet you do have countries out there that, China certainly a leading example, that have very broad surveillance. So how do people deal with that? How do you anticipate you may be able to deal with that in SECs? And more broadly, to pick up on a question from Mark Rotenberg, a longtime privacy expert, how does China affects the broader issues of US-EU collaboration in the digital space.
But first of all, to be clear, we don't have and we didn't have an adequacy decision on China. We don't have this decided. So yes, but it's a huge difference. Now we are discussing about the way to have a specific relation with some partners through adequacy decisions. We will work maybe with the modernization of the SCCs. But again, the SCC, of course, it's possible to use, but with certain guarantees about the functioning of the internal protection for the personal data in the partner country. So we don't have the same kind of use with China than it's possible to do with the US. And if we are entering now in a discussion with the US about what is the next step, is it possible not only to confirm the use of SCCs in the near future with the modernization, but also to go to some adaptation in the different legislations. That's the way forward. And we don't have the same discussion with China. And when I'm looking for maybe a broader approach, I must say that except the discussion at the EU level, we have some discussion in the Council of Europe. You know that. We have also some elements of possible evolution at the level of a broader Europe. But we are also in discussion with, the proposal of Japan, but the proposal of Japan will be maybe first with the US, with Europe, with Canada, with, of course, Japan, but not with China as a first possibility, because, of course, we have more concern about the way to organize the security, the national security and the functioning of the intelligence services maybe in other countries than in the US. And it's the reason why I insist on the good collaboration, because if it's possible to find a way to have a common approach between the US and Europe on different fields, it's the reason why I spoke also about artificial intelligence, it will be the real basis to try to have international standards. If we don't have the capacity to conclude some agreements between the US and Europe, of course, we let more space to others. And it's true that we will let maybe more space for influence coming from China or from other partners. So the relations among the US and EU is very important. It's the reason why I said it was my first visit before the crisis, before the pandemic. It was to Washington in December to start a discussion on all those issues. And we have said we need to continue to enhance our capacity to work closer. But again, we are in such a discussion because we had an adequacy decision on the US and we tried to have another one. We don't have with China, of course.
Right. Susan. Yeah. And then I think we'll try to move to the audience Q&A. We'll go.
Can you talk a little bit about digital sovereignty as a concept? And would you view America's ban, both the House and Senate have now banned TikTok, of TikTok and WeChat as examples of digital sovereignty?
Thank you. Well, there are many discussions on sovereignty in general, and of course, more so now with digital sovereignty, and to see if it's needed to localize the data on your territory or not. I must say that I'm sure that the concept that we have put on in advance in our communication in February about artificial intelligence is that we want to invest in the digital world, and we want to have a better data strategy at the EU level. But the principle is to be sure that it's possible to apply the same rules everywhere. And so we don't want to have a localization of all the data on the open territory. Of course, we want to promote the capacity of Europe to develop some activities in the data strategy, in storage of data, and management of data. But if you are coming from abroad and you are coming with your own data, it's also possible we just ask to apply the same rules or comparable rules than the European. And it's the reason why we have the same approach when we transfer data and we want to have the same protection. If we receive some actors using their own data, we want to be sure that there is no discrimination in the way to organize the use of AI on data. There are no violation of fundamental rights and so on. So it's not to say we want to have a protection and we want to build a real sovereignty at the level of the European Union on that. Of course, we want to be stronger than before because we are knowing that we have a lot of things to do to invest in the digital world. But we are open and we will stay open to others, but again, with the same approach, we ask to all the different partners to come with the same kind of approach about a human-centric approach. I mean, no discrimination in the use of the data by new elements like expert system or learning machine and so on, and no violation of fundamental rights. And if I may, because I know that you are putting the emphasis of trade on trade and the link between trade and data flows. Again, the GDPR is also a protection of fundamental rights. But I want to insist on one point. I have seen a huge difference between the companies at work in the digital world. And to be concrete, Schrems 2 is about Facebook. And we have seen that there are companies at work as a platform with the use of personal data. But there are many other classical industrial companies, and they don't have exactly the same concern because they don't need the same level of transfer of personal data. I insist on the fact the personal data to another part of the world. When if you try to organize your business in the car industry or in the food industry on another continent, you don't need the same transfer of personal data than if you organize a real platform trying to work with personal data of all the users of the platform. And that's, we will also discuss with the industry, and I'm sure that it's important also to discuss with the industry in the US to see what are the requirements of the different categories of companies, because it's maybe easier to use standard contractual clauses for some actors without the same request to transfer massive personal data than for those active in the management, in fact, of personal data due to the fact that they have platforms with users dedicated to that. And I've seen that because I've had a lot of contacts with CEOs of companies, and we don't see the same concern, to be concrete, about Schrems 2. If you have a contact with a CEO at work exclusively in the digital world with a platform, or if you discuss with a classical industry. And that's also a difference, because when you spoke about trade, you need to make such a difference also. And I'm sure that there are some room for manoeuvre for other kind of tools to exchange data flows, to exchange data among companies in such a way.
Okay. So it's, we not should surprising. Move.
It's not surprising that the Schrems 2 decision is about Facebook.
Yeah. So we should move to some audience questions. But yep. Before I do that, I want to put a question to both of you. We seem to be moved, you know, to pick up at the end of the program, which is a little after 11. We seem to be moving at five-year intervals. It's been 5 years since the first Schrems decision. You have a five-year mandate, Commissioner, and it seems like every Justice Commissioner has to negotiate some deal with the United States. So 5 years down the road, what will, you know, this discussion look like? You know, what would a Brookings program on EU-US data transfers look like? So let me, with that, put a question that and put you on the spot a little bit, Commissioner, because I think there are some more concrete questions about the discussions, you know, from Mike Swift at MLEX, how you see this negotiation as, you know, more difficult than Privacy Shield and more difficult even than, and you know, which was more difficult than Safe Harbor. And similarly, are there changes to FISA Section 702 or to Executive Order 12333 that are, you know, part of the discussions, you know, as to how the U.S. could respond more to the court's proportionality concern? So that's something that comes to us from Greg Nojame at CDT, Center for Democracy and Technology. So now you're on the spot, Commissioner.
Yes, but first of all, I want to say that we have a good collaboration with all U.S. partners since not only the Schrems 2 decision, but maybe before, because we have had discussions in the first months of this year about the possible decision and the way forward. And of course, we are knowing that it's very important to give a certain level of certainty to the company. So it's the reason why I said we are in close contact with the European Data Protection Board about the modernization, I don't want to repeat it, of the SCC. That's a possible element. Then, of course, if we want to give a concrete answer to the court, it's also important to analyze the possible legislative changes in the U.S. about different elements. I spoke about national security, intelligence, and so on, but you know that we have had many discussions about the ombudsperson. What is the scope of the possible actions? What is the capacity to intervene? And that's a real issue. What kind, not to have exactly the same mechanism that in Europe, it's not the request, but to have the same level of protection. Is it possible to discuss on the way forward? And I said that the American authorities are the best in the best position to analyze that and to see what are the possible moves. But on the other hand, it's also very important to see what kind of enforcement it's possible for the European citizens about their personal data sent to the U.S. And is it possible to have the same kind of level of enforcement than the U.S. citizen? If you have some possibility to go to justice, again, I'm Commissioner for Justice, it will be an important part of the process. And so it's possible to build on actual existing elements in the US. I spoke about ombudsperson and different kind of actual possible mechanism in the US, but maybe also about some possible changes. And of course, it will be more and more important if you have the same request for a protection of personal data coming from the US citizens. Because I said, I've seen the new evolution in California, in other states. If there are some evolutions at the federal level, of course, you will give some rights to the US citizens. Is it possible, if you are doing that, to give the same kind of protection and the same kind of possible enforcement to European citizens having their data transferring to the US, like for the US citizens in Europe, of course. If we organize a transfer of data from the US to Europe, is it possible to give to the American citizens the capacity to enforce their rights? And so I'm sure that we are working on different levels. Of course, at the technical level, certainly the SCCs, that is the mechanism. But we work at the level of the common vision on the protection for the personal data. And again, there are, I'm sure, some evolutions on both sides in this way. And then what kind of enforcement of that? And of course, national security, I know it's a very sensitive issue and that it's more complicated. I'm sure that we need to be very prudent. But I've said also that we try to work on e-evidence and on an agreement between the US and EU and US, because there's a difference between the exchange of data among companies, also in the way to work about e-evidence, and the law enforcement authorities, of course. We have different rules for the law enforcement authority, and that there are some possibilities to do more. But we try to find a way to a solution at the EU level first about the access to e-evidence for the law enforcement authority in Europe, and then to see if it's possible to conclude some agreements with the US on that. But again, the most important element is to see the evolution in the protection of personal data in the US, and then the capacity to enforce the rights given to the European citizens, like you will have maybe an evolution about the rights of the US citizens in the same field.
So we have several questions about adequacy decisions, and particularly Fernanda Nicola of American University asks about effectively, you know, what will be the transparency of the commission reviews of existing adequacy decisions. Mostly have on your plate the review in light of both Schrems decisions for some countries with intelligence programs, Five Eyes partners, Israel, and others. And of course, you mentioned as well the pending adequacy decision. So, what will be the level of transparency on those? Will there be commission decisions in the reviews that could be reviewable by the CJEU or that would inform the application of SCCs?
So, first of all, of course.
Similarly, to reflect a question from online from Elaine Fahey. So, how do you anticipate changing those reviews, given what has been the clear sort of differences between the Commission's adequacy decisions and reviews and the views of the CJEU?
First of all, we have organized an evaluation of the GDPR, after 2 years. It was the second anniversary of the GDPR. And before the summer, we have explained the evaluation. But I have said also that it was possible to postpone the evaluation on the adequacy decisions due to the fact that we were waiting for the Schrems II decision. Now we have. And so we will fully apply the requirements of the court in the review of the existing adequacy decisions, such as with Canada or Switzerland, to take some examples. and we are currently evaluating. So we will see if we have some concerns about the way to apply also the conclusion of the court, the decision of the court, and the requirements of the court on the existing adequacy decisions. We will also apply those requirements for the new adequacy decisions. I said that we are for the moment discussing with South Korea, and of course, we'll see if it's possible to put the same kind of requirements in the discussions about the adequacy decision, and the same due to the Brexit with UK. And we are working now to collect more information about the way forward in UK about the protection of personal data. And to the extent that issues would emerge from the evaluation of existing adequacy decision, the relevant report will identify measures to resolve them. So we'll try, like we discussed with the US, to ask maybe additional safeguards agreed with the concerned country. So if we have some concern, to be concrete, about actual adequacy decisions in Canada or in Switzerland, we'll ask to have an agreement on new safeguards. If you have concern about a possible situation in UK, we'll do the same. And of course, I must say that it's possible to go to a suspension or a termination of certain adequacy. And you spoke about the transparency. Of course, we will have a transparent process. And it will be possible for the citizens or the organization to go to the court. And the ECJ has the same capacity to react, of course, about other adequacy decisions, like it was possible to react about the adequacy decisions with the US. And so suspension of or termination of certain adequacy decisions is a possible outcome if our assessment would reveal certain problem in the level of protection that cannot be resolved. So we have the same kind of situation, and we need, of course, to ensure continuity. But the first element is to see if it's possible to have additional safeguard if it's needed. And I'm sure that in the discussion with some partners, it will be possible to do that and to avoid, of course, a suspension or a termination. But we are not sure. And you have maybe followed the discussions with UK. For the moment, we have difficulties on other fields than just about the transfer of data. And so I don't know what should be or could be the situation at the end of the year. I prefer to have a smooth process and to have a good agreement for the future relations between EU and UK. I'm sure that the data transfer is an important part of a smooth process and a good agreement, but I don't know. That depends from both sides, of course. But again, it will be transparent. We will come with an evaluation, and we will say if we need new elements on the basis of the requirements of the court. We'll apply exactly the same reasonment with all the partners that we are ready to do with the US for the moment.
So we have a couple of technical questions, which I want to put in the context of the review of SCCs and sort of what sorts of measures may work to enable data transfers. One from Xavier Brousseau at the French Embassy on federated learning tools, so tools that allow the sharing of access to data for inquiries, but without sharing the data, and then from Gary Lefevre at the company Anonymous, which works on anonymous transfer solutions, German DPA guidance on use of anonymization or encryption or pseudonymization, where the data exporter retains the keys. Whether are those things that are being examined as part of the review of SCCs and potential mechanisms for additional safeguards under the court's decision.
Yes, but first of all, due to the fact that we are working, as said, with the European Data Protection Board, so the board where are sitting all the different national data protection authorities. So if there are some proposals coming, like you said, from Germany or from other national data protection authorities, it's a part of the discussion. But the main issue about the SCC is first a work done since many months about the modernization due to the fact that we have worked with CCs before the GDPR. And we need, of course, to take into account the GDPR in the modernization. That's the first element. The second element is, of course, the new technologies that we have now. And, of course, we need also to take into account the evolution of the technology. And the third one, the requirement coming from the decision of the court. And it's on such a last part that there are some ideas about effectively a mechanism to fulfill all the requirements of the ECG. And it's the reason why I've asked from the beginning, not only to work with our US partners, but we are working with Mrs. Jelinek. You said that you have seen a mail about from Mrs. Jelinek. I'm working with Mrs. Jelinek and the board from the beginning to be sure that there is a common approach from all the national data protection authorities on the way forward. And it's the reason why, of course, when we will come at the end of the year with the new SCCs, we will have a formal advice from the board. And so, again, all those technical proposals are in the examination of the possible modernization because they are coming from the national data protection authorities, and we are working with the network of the national data protection authorities. Of course, it will be possible to follow some proposals and not others. We will see. We try to have a common approach of all the national data protection authorities. When we have complex issues, and the SREMS too, it's a complex issue, of course, we want to organize a process to have a common approach in the entire Europe, so with all the different actors. It's the reason why I insist, I've listened to your introduction and to say you have seen the decision of the Irish authority yesterday. It's just an investigation, you know. And I've seen the declaration coming from Facebook, but the official position of the DPA, it's an investigation and we are working on it.
Yeah. Well, we need to come to the end. So 5-year predictions, I'll go first just to kick it off in sort of a few seconds. I believe we have to prepare for the worst, but hope for the best. So we need to keep hoping we will have comprehensive federal privacy protection in the United States. We will have surveillance laws that incorporate the protections that exist for international citizens and numerous other safeguards. We will have a robust data flows framework, and that Brookings program will be talking about the successes in international collaboration on things like climate science and epidemiology and the like. Susan, your prediction.
I predict that there's going to need to be rules governing the mixing of public, personal, private data in plans. I think that AI strategies and data plans are going to be better integrated. I agree with you that we're going to have a national privacy law in the United States. But Commissioner Reynders, you made an important point, and I would love if you could expand on it, which was about differences between metadata for companies, such as, let's say, Ford Motor Company using IoT versus a Facebook type. TikTok user.
Commissioner Reynders, I have time for that, but you have the last word.
No, but some elements, maybe if we are going to the next years. First of all, I'm hoping that it'd be possible to don't organize a new webinar in 5 years' time, not only because we will have a physical presence and not a video conference, but certainly because I don't want to speak about a Schrems 3 decision after 5 years. So that's the first element. If I try to have a projection, please not with the Schrems 3. So we need to find solutions. The second element, the same. I'm sure that we will have an evolution in the US about the privacy and the protection of personal data. And if it's the case, the state level and the federal level, it will be maybe possible to have a common approach to convince other partners to go in the same direction, and to have a more and more international vision, and to have more and more international standards about the data protection for the personal data. And of course, the most difficult issue, I'm sure, is to see what kind of evolution in the field of national security and the different possibilities for the intelligence services and the law enforcement authorities to have an access to personal data. And there, I said, we need to work about the way to enforce the individual rights about the data protection. And we need to think maybe with the US about the way to reinforce in the five next years the capacities of the ombudsperson in the US. If you have an evolution on the same rights for the US citizens in the protection of their personal data. And then, how it's possible to give the same capacity to enforce their rights to the European citizens than to the US citizens in the US, like we try to give the same enforcement of their rights to the US citizens in Europe than for the EU citizens. That are the main issue, because we don't want to have exactly the same mechanism or the same rules. We want to have a possible comparison and to be sure that we have the same kind of protection. But if you give a new protection to US citizens, it will be easier, of course, to give the same protection to EU citizens, and it will be more a problem of enforcement of the right than something else. And again, it's possible to have another vision about the national security issue on both sides of the Atlantic, but we need to be sure that we are given a protection to the people and to give the same capacity to enforce such a protection. And of course, if we are doing that, again, it will be possible to avoid a Schrems III decision and to work with an adequacy decision and to work with a very solid basis for all the companies. I've just expressed the fact that I've seen a difference between the companies that work quite exclusively in the digital world and other companies in more classical industry. But we try to find a solution for both. And I'm sure that in 5 years' time, it must be possible, not just to work with SCCs, but maybe to go to a new adequacy decision due to a positive evolution in the US about the protection of personal data and a better understanding about the way to enforce the rights of the citizens of both sides of the Atlantic.
Well, Commissioner Didier Reynders, thank you very much. You certainly have your work cut out for you to deal with all of those issues with the urgency that you described. Professor Susan Aronson, thank you for joining us today. And thank you, all of our audience, for being here today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.